Hey
Hi,
Anne, how are
Emily.
you?
A little frazzled.
All right,
How are you?
I'm fine. We are here tonight to talk about Justice Stevens' retirement and the Supreme Court shortlist gossip, which is abounding, and the Phoebe Prince bullying case in South Hadley, Massachusetts, and criminal charges that were filed in that case. And then Anne, you wanted to talk a little bit about the Tea Party and how it is getting pegged as angry and violent, right?
Yes. Okay, three topics.
So
We'll
tell
do
me what
it.
you think. So I was reading over the weekend people like Ruth Marcus and Tom Goldstein predicting a very centrist appointment for Justice Stevens' seat, either Judge Merrick Garland of the D.C. Circuit or Elena Kagan, who is Solicitor General. And I was wondering what you thought about that, both in terms of its likelihood and whether that was the right way for the Obama administration to go.
Well, I can't read Obama's mind on this, but I think there's going to be a fight no matter what he does because there's so much political hay to be made fighting over the issues that come up when someone is goes through confirmation in the Supreme Court. There are issues that are good for the Republican Party, and the elections are coming up in the fall. So I don't see how they can pass over making a lot out of it, no matter who is
Well, now,
nominated.
does
What are
that
we?
mean?
You're close. Closer in with the gossip, so why don't you tell me what you're hearing? I mean, I made the prediction that he would pick Diane Wood just because we can't have a court with no Protestants on.
Well, I'm sort of
What
with
some
you
people
on
are
that.
thinking
Let's
about
talk
that.
about that for a second. We have six Catholics on the court and two Jews, and then we have this empty seat, which Justice Stevens filled. He, of course, was a Protestant. I have to say that, I mean,
Remember, we talked about this before, you and I, when at the Sotomayor, and I said, how can he appoint another Catholic? There's overrepresentation of Catholics. Well, now, if he appoints, and now it's even worse because if he, it, because having picked Sotomayor and having left it in the condition that he has, with Stevens, the last Protestant retiring, it's as if all the Jews are now disqualified, which sounds like outright discrimination.
And we should
And
say
that
that
obviously
Merrick
won't be
Garland
talked about, but I'm
and
predicting that the Jews are going to be the losers here. That seems all wrong.
and the
But
Jews
what is
are, wait,
that?
Anne, and the people on the short list are Merrick Garland and Elena Kagan, precisely the same people who are supposedly at the top of the short list. And should also add that Adam Liptak has a piece in the Times today in which he called around and asked people whether they were troubled by this notion of no Protestants on the court, and it seemed like everybody sort of shrugged at him, that at least inside the Beltway
Oh, of
there is the
course they
notion that this
say
really
that.
doesn't matter.
Oh, everyone asked is going to have to say that. No one would say, oh, I'm going to just strike these people off because they're Jewish.
Well, he
That's
didn't phrase the
no one is
question
going to
like
say
that.
that. But when the pick is actually made, how is the pick going to be made? We should note that Nina Totenberg had an article in the last few days about this, and she said she called it a radioactive issue, and yet. It's still there. Once we have gotten into having diversity an issue on the court, the lack of diversity on this one factor, I think, is really glaring, even though no one wants to talk about it, because at this point, it sounds like discrimination against the individual who would be stricken because of their religion.
Right, although I have to say that it does seem to me sort of common sense that because Protestants are the largest religious denomination in the country, we should have one on the Supreme Court. It just seems there's something very odd about the notion of not including them. So I would say that it's got to be a point, a plus to be a Protestant at this point, but I can't really tell how much it matters. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily going to disqualify Kagan and Garland.
No one will say that it was. We'll only see who the final person is, and we won't know why the ones who weren't picked. But I'm
True.
just going to guess that. So what do you think of Diane Wood?
Well, I quite like Diane Wood as a candidate. I mean, as a candidate, as a potential nominee. She is supposed to be super smart. She has gone toe to toe with Frank Easterbrook and Richard Posner, who are two other super smart Seventh Circuit judges. And, she has a really solid liberal record. Now, there's also more to fight over with her than with either Garland or Kagan in that she has actually written decisions about abortion, which, of course, is like the ultimate hot button issue for these nominations, like it or not. And so that's the reason why, at least over the weekend, it seemed like her star was a little lower. But what do you think about her?
Well, she's also Chicago and was actually a colleague of Obama's at the University of Chicago.
That's right.
I think she went to University of Texas Law School. Am I correct
Yes,
about
that's
that? So
also
there's this
nice,
idea of a little
not from Harvard and
geographic
Yale.
diversity and not just another person from Harvard and Yale. I think if the Democrats aren't willing to defend the right to access to abortions, it's truly pathetic.
So I was reading through some of Wood's opinions on abortion today to try to get a sense of mm-hmm. what is really out there to remind myself, because I actually read about her last year. She was one of the people on the shortlist when Sonia Sotomayor was chosen. And mm-hmm. there's one very complicated case that made its way up to the Seventh Circuit, to the Supreme Court. I think it mm-hmm. went to the Supreme Court three times by the end. It's called Now versus Scheidler. I hope I'm saying that mm-hmm. right. And mm-hmm. it's about some very intense protests at an abortion clinic in which the protesters weren't, you know, standing outside holding hands and yelling or chanting. They came into the clinic. There was some violence. One woman who was actually there not to have an abortion but was a post-op for surgery had to go to the hospital afterwards because mm-hmm. her incisions opened due to the violence. And, you know, people chained themselves to the tables, and it was just really a pretty extreme protest. The kind of protest that wouldn't be legal now because Congress passed a law specifically to make such protests illegal when they're this virulent. But at the time, that statute didn't exist. And so the prosecution of the protesters took place under the Hobbs Act. And there's this very long back and forth, or long in terms of the amount of time and energy, between Judge Wood on the Seventh Circuit and the Supreme Court trying to interpret the Hobbs Act. To me, it reads in this very lawyerly way as like a parsing of the statutory language of the Hobbs Act. But Judge Wood was twice reversed by the Supreme Court in these cases, and I think that that case does take some explaining, although in the end, to me, she came off as quite doing what judges do. I'm sorry?
Hey, and you know, that doesn't even sound, it's not really much about the right to abortion at all. Interesting mm-hmm. that we're going to talk about the anger over the Tea Party and the violent Tea Party protests, or the concern about that, and also bullying, because it seems to have more to do with those kinds of mm-hmm. issues than with the right to abortion. Mm-hmm. What kind of protests can there be? What are we to say about free speech when people are trying to not be harassed and so on? I think it's a touchy issue that I care a lot about the free speech issues on the other side, and maybe there is a concern that some modern day liberal jurists don't care about free speech like they used to. But let's talk about free speech, and that's not really the right to abortion mm-hmm. at all. But I don't see why to disqualify her or to reject her because that seems to be something that can't be talked about. Really, I mean, what are liberals for if they won't stand up for the things they believe in over matters like this? It's so pusillanimous.
That's a good word for this. Now, do you think that this whole conversation has reflects the degree to which conservatives have really succeeded in redefining what a Supreme Court justice should be like? You know, we saw Sotomayor last year reject Obama's word empathy and instead mm-hmm. go for the notion that Chief Justice Roberts had put forth at his confirmation hearings, this ridiculous notion, yeah. if you ask me, that judges call balls and strikes like umpires. Does that set up the next nominee?
Well, it's the easy way through the confirmation hearings, and I would expect that ritual to be followed once again, even though it disgusted some liberal commentators
mm-hmm, definitely.
That Sotomayor didn't step up and express liberal values. You know, the seat the new justice will take is not just Stevens's seat. It was previously Justice Douglas's seat. Mm-hmm. And it's been a long time since we've had a liberal justice who would really be out there and liberal like Justice Douglas was. I think it's sad that there's no voice on the court like that. I think, you know, Obama was elected. He's a liberal president. He's got an appointment. Make a liberal appointment and defend it. Pick someone really high quality who can do what they need to do, and let them defend the liberal position as a judge. I think liberals should be angry if he doesn't do that.
All this appeasing
of the conservatives.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really interesting point of view. I mean, obviously, just to make the obvious political counter-argument, it's about expending time and political capital and the notion that Obama needs to move on financial regulation this summer, he needs to create jobs, and that whether he chooses Diane Wood or Merrick Garland is not really going to make or break the Democrats in the 2010 election.
Wouldn't it be interesting if liberals could build up liberal capital by taking liberal positions and defending them and persuading the American people that those positions were good, as opposed to caving to the conservatives and continually, implicitly supporting the position which you just stated, which is that the liberal, there's something suspicious about the liberal position. Mm-hmm. How about embracing it and defending it and persuading people again?
Mm-hmm. Good points. I'm planning to write about some of this week, so you've given me excellent fodder. Thank you.
Okay.
Is there anything else Supreme Court related you are eager to say?
I just think there's going to be a fight no matter what happens, and I think it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. And with whoever is picked, they're going to come up with things to fight over. There's a whole issue of could there be a filibuster, would there be a filibuster, and that Obama himself voted to, or said he would, filibuster
Alito.
Was it
Roberts?
Alito, yeah. Roberts, I think it was Roberts.
Roberts.
So, Obama was willing to filibuster. Obama voted against Roberts. And Alito, right?
Yes.
So
now the Republicans,
took his liberal position against really high qualified conservative candidates. So now that he's president, he should, show his colors and pick a liberal.
Now the Republicans, so far at least, seem to be backing away from a big fight. And it's hard to tell, obviously, whether this is just, you know, a kind of bait and switch tactic or whether they mean it, but they at least so far are saying, hey, if you pick someone like Merrick Garland, we may well have an overwhelming consensus. Just stay away from the, quote, activist judge.
Yeah.
So you don't believe
it. Will Obama be played? Well, I think it would be interesting to see if Obama's played by that, but I think liberals have a right to expect that they're going to get a liberal justice on the court at long last.
All right, well, we'll see. I hope we get to talk about this again. Months will elapse before we know the answer.
Yeah.
That I think we can say for sure. So tell me what you think about the criminal charges filed in this bullying case, and I'll just give
You know more about it than I do.
Let me give quick background, because I have been actually following this case pretty closely. It's a really sad story. A 15-year-old girl named Phoebe Prince, who is a freshman at South Hadley High School, small town public high school in Western Massachusetts, committed suicide in January after she had been bullied by a bunch of kids at the high school. Essentially, she had briefly dated a couple of boys, and their girlfriends didn't like that and got a couple of small groups of kids together to, you know, be really, really mean and cruel to her over a few months, or at least...
Now, can I just insert a question?
Yes.
Teenagers are mean to each other all
the
time, and they don't just go home and commit suicide. Did she leave a suicide note? Was that the only thing going on in her life? I mean, obviously, family, depression, all kinds of things can lead a person to suicide, but to have a tight cause and effect, I mean, I'm a little suspicious of that, and I think that the people who love the girl have reason to embrace the idea that mean people made her do it, but isn't life more complex than that?
Well, I think you're zeroing in on exactly the right question, and we don't really know the answer yet. No suicide note has been produced. That doesn't mean there isn't one. We just haven't seen it. Phoebe had immigrated to the United States from Ireland in September. She came with her mom and her sister. Her father stayed behind, so that's like a big transition she was making. The family spokesman has said that she had problems with bullying in Ireland before she came and that the school was alerted to that. So, you know, to some degree we have a kid who may have been vulnerable, and we just don't know yet the answers to the question you were asking about depression and her mental health history. But certainly I think this, as you put it, the tight cause and effect is a question that people need to keep pushing on, because what we have without that is this, kind of widely held assumption, particularly in the wake of these criminal charges, that this group of teenagers caused this death. And that's a really heavy burden to put on them, given the complexities that...
By adults,
yes,
by the law.
Right,
and,
exactly.
I mean, you know, I think suicide, it's something you do to yourself. It is killing yourself. I think people who kill them, they're gone if they succeed. They're gone, so you can't blame them. The desire to blame someone else, someone who you can still punish, I think should be examined and might even be quite evil. I think maybe the message should be out there. You don't like the parents to hear this. You feel sorry for the loved ones who've lost someone. But shouldn't the person who makes the decision, who commits the act of murdering a human being, that person is responsible for what they did?
Right. I think
whatever happened to you, you know, if you commit a murder, you don't get to say, oh, well, people made my life hell and I had reason to do it. You're still a murderer. We might understand, be interested in the whole context of why you committed, but you committed a murder. People who kill themselves are the ones who do the act. The idea that the people who made you sad and made you your life difficult, they didn't kill you. You killed yourself. You're gone, and nothing can be done about that.
Mm-hmm.
But for the people who remain to play out their psychodrama by identifying, especially young people, to destroy, to find closure, to find meaning in what happened, maybe the meaning is that the person who did the act could be pitied, but still should be the one who is the killer.
So what we have in this case is a very unusual scenario in which it's the district attorney who's really at this point promoting the idea that the bullying caused a great deal of harm. Now, she's obviously not charging these teenagers with murder or anything like that, but she did bring very serious felony charges against four of them, including a civil rights violation charge that carries a 10-year prison sentence. Now, I mean, I'm not suggesting, I don't think these kids are going to prison for 10 years, but these are serious consequences, and I keep thinking about how I really can't imagine that these teenagers, when they were behaving badly, and certainly they behaved badly, but I can't imagine they had any idea they were opening themselves up to this kind of exposure. And while one might hope that the good that could come out of this case is to sort of spotlight bullying as a big problem that schools and parents need to take seriously, I'm not sure that we need criminal charges in order for that to happen.
I think it's terrible to use criminal law to achieve social goals like this. If there is bullying, the bullying is going on now in all kinds of schools against people who are not yet dead. Adopt policies, do something about those real things that continue to go on. Don't use criminal law in this heavy-handed way to go after the people who happen to be the bullies of the person who then killed themselves. I don't think you should be using criminal law unless you would be ready to also prosecute all the kids who did the same thing where nobody killed themselves, mm-hmm. and all the adults who did the same thing. Are you really bringing statutory rape charges against everyone? Are you, mm-hmm. if you have something where somebody, for example, pulled the books out of someone's hand or, you know, threw a soda can at them, which are the acts of violence that I read about, is everything equivalent to that also producing felony charges, criminal charges? Are you really dragging kids into court for that and adults into court for everything like that? If not, then I don't think it's right to single out these kids because the girl, the victim, the target in question happened to go over the line and commit the act that she chose to do, that mm-hmm. she decided to do and did.
Mm-hmm.
What distinguishes their act isn't that the girl happened to do this terrible thing of killing herself. It's the act that they did. That's the way criminal law should work, and I think it's a terrible use of justice, a terrible use of government power.
Well, it'll be really interesting to see how these charges play out. We're only at the very beginning. The arraignments were last week, so there's plenty to go. I guess the other thing I've been thinking about a lot, just to close this out, is that this cruelty against Phoebe took place over a number of months. And I do think that we are still struggling as parents and I think in schools to come to terms with how you deal with this kind of incredibly mean exclusion. You know, take out the criminal charges for a minute, which are so unusual. But just this, you know, it can put kids in a great deal of pain to be in these situations. And yet when you sort of talk about each incident individually, it can seem sort of minimal. It's really the cumulative effect of all of them, I think, and mm-hmm. creating a different kind of social norm in which this behavior just isn't acceptable and somehow, like, kids just know that they really can't do it. Anyway, mm-hmm. that's the challenge. Tell me what you think about this, the Tea Party movement and what you were talking about as efforts to make them seem angry and violent and mean. Just like
well, I think opponents of I think that the political arguments that the many people who are turning out for these events are making ought to be taken seriously on their substance, and we should have a debate on the substance, not if you don't like the substance of what they stand for, to try to impugn them as, you know, racists or violent people. I mean, maybe there's some racist or violent people somewhere in the group, but basically thousands of people have turned out to demonstrations, and for the most part, they're very ordinary people who are not doing anything wrong, who are just concerned, and I think it's weird that people with such political views are actually coming out to a lot of events and are energized politically. I think it's a very unusual thing that you don't normally see. You normally see anti-war people mm-hmm. and people on the left coming out. So it's an unusual thing, but I think that these people should be respected, and the urge to paint them as racists or to hear somebody somewhere yell a bad word or misspell a sign or something like that, and to try to create a sense that there's something really toxic about them, I think is really it's really wrong.
So you think they're being painted as the most extreme participants?
I don't even know that there's anyone. I think that there's actual lying and misrepresentation going on. It also creates a danger that...
someone did yell at John Lewis, right? I mean, we do have these moments where some really insightful...
What are you saying?
Someone did yell the N-word at John Lewis.
Like I don't believe that. I don't believe
Oh, really?
That. I do not think that happened.
Huh.
If you look at... I think the spitting event did not occur. I think that the whole story was wrong.
Interesting.
There's
what's
a lot of
your
video
evidence
when
for
those,
that?
Well, when the, this was the day before the vote on the healthcare mm-hmm. bill, the members, a group of, well, first of all, why did they walk through the Tea Party crowd? I think they were trying to create a photo op because they weren't using the normal way of going from their offices into the building, which there's a whole system of tunnels that's used. But there was a deliberate choice to walk through the crowd. There were many, many cameras there by lots of people. I think they're including by them. And they wanted to catch something bad going on. And the video that I have seen of it, there's no yelling of the word even once. There's certainly no chanting, as was claimed. There's of the N-word. There's a chant. There's a booing. And then there's kill the bill. That is a kill the bill. They're just a chanting kill the bill. There was no N-word. And I think that the absence of video, given this very public event where there were lots of people and lots of people with cameras, including the people that were walking through the crowd, the failure to produce a video showing that chant means that it simply did not happen. And to play the race card like that, to mobilize that criticism of the decent people who took the trouble to show up and register their disapproval of the bill is truly shameful.
Hmm.
And the fact that the media picked it up uncritically and spread that meme the day before the vote and has shown no interest in getting to the actual truth or correcting it after the fact, such that many people like you think that it really happened, I think is a terrible thing to do to people who've shown up. My husband was took a bus down to go to be there in the group the day before the Saturday before the vote, and people there were very friendly. They were nonviolent. There wasn't an ugly picture, the sort that the media seems so eager to try to present.
Hmm.
I went to a Tea Party event here mainly to get some photographs to use on my blog. The Tea Party Express came through, did a stop in Madison. Which was kind of a funny thing to do. And I went to just see what things were like. And really, people were very, very calm and nonviolent. So I just think it's really ugly not to use this, especially to bring race into something where race doesn't currently exist.
That's really interesting. Well, if anyone has this missing video or missing evidence, we would be very interested in seeing it.
Well, I think they had every incentive to come forward with it, and if the incentive were there, it would be there. I mean, if the video were there, it would have been fished out and shown.
All right, I hear you. Anything else you want to add before we close?
Oh, well, I'd like to hear what you think on that particular point. What do you think of the way that the Tea Party people have been treated? Do you think it's appropriate to try to portray them as violent and...
I think it really depends what the underlying facts are. I think the underlying facts are what matters in terms of the portrayal, and I just feel I'm surprised to hear that that you think that incident with Lewis didn't happen, because I certainly was.
The incident with the use of the N-word. Are you talking about the spitting with the cleaver?
Yeah. I was particularly talking about Lewis. Anyway, so to me, it depends on what actually has gone on. I mean, you know, certainly.
But don't you think if you're going to say something happened, the first thing you should do is establish that it happened and then do something with it. Not throw it out there and say, well, I wonder if that happened. I wonder if something happened. If something supposedly happened, show that it happened and then let's talk about it. To start with just like a theory that maybe this happened. Maybe these people are a bunch of violent racists. Let's go with that idea until it's proven otherwise.
And what about some of the other instances of violence around the health care bill, like the rocks getting thrown into various congressmen's windows and Tom Perriello's brother's gas line getting cut? Does that move you at all?
Well, we don't know who cut that gas line. I don't know what that was. But, I mean, there were a lot of spurious events out there. I think that the bricks through the window, I think that somebody instigated that, and there were a few incidences of that, and those really are very bad. I think when things actually happen, find out that they happen. Establish who did it, who actually is responsible, because, you know, you don't want to create a situation in which opponents of the group have an incentive to actually go out and do acts of violence so that it looks like the people that they're opposed to did it. You know, I think you don't want to create an environment like that or light a fire under some isolated crazies. But all of that aside, whatever particular individuals may have done, and let's find out who they are, who did it, and why, to tar the whole group and try to create the impression that these are just this is just a marginalized group, I think that's a terrible thing to do. These are people who have a position to argue. Why not engage them on the merits, unless you think that unless you don't have an answer for them?
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Well, that's I agree with the figuring out who did it and why, et cetera. It certainly seems like we could use a lot more reporting about how exactly
a little
this
truth
is working.
Might be in order.
All right,
let's find out what really happened.
I think we can end on that note. That's certainly something we can agree on. A little bit of truth is pretty much always a good thing.
Okay. Anything right. more you would like to say? Okay.
Thanks a lot, Anne. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.